Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another Wednesday. That means the Voice of Indie podcast. This is show number 66, and I am your host, Beam Weeks, and with me is Mr. Stephen Jeeves. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
Hi, I'm just thrilled to be here. It's a great Wednesday night in Alabama, and this week the Coots came back, so take note, Verwayne. Thanks for sending your sending your coots down here for the winter. But hey, some good news this week. The movie Dune, which is really part one, made enough money that they went ahead and greenlit the second one. So they're going to finish the series. That'll be great.
All right. So
what's it like up there?
Today I broke out the lawnmower and didn't mow the lawn. I mowed up the leaves. The leaves are starting to fall. One tree, it has no problem dropping its leaves just like that, but the other one's kind of shy, so it's going to take a little longer for the one in the main part of the yard. But, so once I get these leaves, I think one more time, mow them up, I can put the lawnmower up for the winter, and I'm good until spring. Getting cold, too. Getting colder. We've had some frost the last couple of nights, but not the bitter cold yet.
So you got to roll in?
I got to roll in.
Call 516-453-9902 right now and join us on air or tweet us with the hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body and we'll read your comment or question live. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group.
Give us a call, everybody.
Yeah. All right. We got, it's a real busy time of year for us. Everybody's trying to get things out for Christmas. We've been talking about J. Ash Looney's Whoopi Likes Her Bacon Crispy. It is in pre-sale now, and you can go order hardcovers, they're laminate hardcovers. It's an oversized book. It's a big square book. Or you can order your softcover version, or you can order your ebook versions. The only problem is you can't order a print book on Amazon right now because every time somebody publishes a book on Amazon, it's unavailable until Lauren spends hours and hours trying to deal with those whatchamacallums over there at Amazon to straighten out the problem. So if you're trying to order from Amazon, be a little bit patient for a few more days. But otherwise, Whoopi Likes Her Bacon Crispy is now in pre-sale, and it will be released 2 days before Thanksgiving. So get your orders in now.
All right, you're sounding kind of breaking up there.
Okay.
Your mic's connected in. All right.
How's that?
That sounds good. Legacy of Danger by Patricia A. Guthrie is out now as of Halloween. This is a really cool book. Great story. I did the editing on it. I'm familiar with the story. Grabbed a copy of it, too, just so I have one on my Kindle. This is paranormal, romance, thriller, murder mystery, all rolled into one. Great characters. Great story. Great plot lines. So check it out. Legacy of Danger, available now.
All right.
If you miss a show, find us in the archives in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, on Spotify, or under the podcast tab at freshinkgroup.com, beamweeks.com, and stephengees.com. On YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe.
Cool. So another book that we're trying to have out, we're looking to put it into pre-sale within the next week or so, is called There Must Be Something in the Water, Anthology of the Fourth Generation Descendants of Green Pond After the Emancipation. Excuse me. This book is written by Abigail Miriam Hamilton Hugini, who is a very successful woman in her own right, and her husband, Andrew Hugini Jr., is the president of the University of Alabama at Huntsville. So they live here in Huntsville, not too far from me. But Green Pond is in South Carolina, out there close to the coast. And it's a very poor, back water, very rural kind of an area. And it's a very black population overall. And from that small town, there have been scores of people who have gone on to accomplish great things, like become presidents of universities. So that's what this book is about. She takes a close look at 40-something black folks who came out of that area and what they've done with their lives. And it's a cool book. We're filling up extra pages that are in it with pictures of the area and quotes from some of the people in the area and all that. Plus, we have beautiful pictures of all of the people featured in the book and anywhere from 1 to 3 page kind of biographies telling their stories. It's an interesting, very interesting book. We're looking to have that in pre-sale within about a week.
All right. And Girl Wears Those Shoes by author Jenny Wong, that's coming out next week. The video is now up on the Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel, so get over there and take a look at that. This is a novel. It's another one that I edited, so I'm familiar with the story. It's about a young woman a young Chinese-American woman who makes her living, gets by, basically pays her bills by being a stripper in a club down in Houston. But she's got bigger dreams. She wants to be a real estate agent, and she actually wants to own her own company. She's got big dreams. So this is a story of her journey, and that's out next week. Go check the video over on YouTube.
And smash that
like
button.
Got a manuscript you want the pros to see? FreshInkGroup.com's homepage has a free evaluation button. Share your best work with the members at Fresh Ink Group.
Yeah, like Stephen was just saying, smash that like button. And if you haven't subscribed to the Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel, get over there and subscribe to it. We're always putting new content on there. So
another book that we're looking to have in pre-sale within 2 weeks is The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms. Now, many of you will remember Carlisle was a guest of ours on the show 3, 4, 5 months ago, something like that. He had published this book with another publisher, but was never really happy with the work that they did. So he asked us if we would tighten it up, clean it up, give him a new cover and do some things like that and republish it. So we're in the process of doing that. Unfortunately, this company, and it's a very well-known company, they even have TV commercials, had promised that, oh, hey, you own all your stuff, and if you want to leave and go somewhere else, you know, we'll give you all your files. They were all sabotaged. We wound up having to start over from scratch on this one, and that's really too bad because they were purposely designed to make it so that we couldn't use them. But anyway, look for that. The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms should be in pre-sale within 2 weeks.
All right. The Second Wort Chronicle, that's the sequel to Icicle. That's by Robert G. Willicroft. That's about 2 weeks out, so keep an eye out for that. And you'll get news on that in the newsletter and through Twitter as well. So just remember the Second Wort Chronicle for all of you Robert G. Willicroft sci-fi fans.
Yeah, and if you like big space adventure kind of things with geopolitical and universe political things happening and you know, all the modern technology and stuff, those are your kind of books, especially if you're a fan of classic sci-fi like Robert A. Heinlein. Mr. Willicroft's style is very much in tribute to that era of science fiction. Good character-based, rip-roaring space opera adventure stories, and I really like those kinds, so we're looking forward to this book. We'd also like to welcome a new member to Fresh Ink Group, Josh Frederick, who is in Iowa, and he has a book about a young woman who is tripping through dimensions in time and has a real...
You are starting to break up again, David.
Okay, I don't know what the problem here is. Let me push up on this. Is this good?
Yeah.
Okay, good. But at any rate, that's Josh Frederick. We're just getting started on his project this week. We're working on Andrew McGregor's and 7 or 8 other books at the same time. But look for that, you know, sometime in a few months. And that's Josh Frederick. Welcome to Fresh Ink Group, Josh.
Welcome, Josh. And let's move on to tonight's guest. Joan Hall has always loved a good story. Some of her earliest memories are the times when she listened to her mother tell something about herself or her family. Although she enjoyed all her stories, the ones that involved suspense or mystery fascinated her most. Even as a child, she would think about the what ifs and was intrigued by inexplicable happenings. Joan became an avid reader, and this developed into a desire to write. She started by scribbling short stories. She dabbled in poetry in her early teens, as did many of her friends. At age 17, she wrote a short YA novel by hand, but it was a long time before she wrote another piece of fiction. She writes mystery and romantic suspense. She also delved a little into science fiction for her time travel story, Gold Wings, which is included in the anthology Quantum Wanderlust. Her upcoming series will feature legends and folklore. She's not superstitious. She'll purposely walk under a ladder or cross a black cat's path. In fact, one of her cats is black, and he found his way to her home. She likes solving mysteries and once thought being a private detective would be an exciting job. Welcome to the show, Joan. We are glad to have you here.
Hey, Joan.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So tell us, where are you from originally?
Originally, I was born in Dallas, Texas, moved to East Texas, or my parents moved to East Texas when I was just a toddler, and I've lived here ever since. I live in Northeast Texas near the Tyler area.
Right. Now, in the bio, we touched on the fact that your mother kind of instilled that love of storytelling when you were a child. What were some of her stories like? I mean, you know, what kind of examples would she?
Oh, gosh. My mom was 42 when I was born, so she lived through the Great Depression, World War II, things like that, times like that. But she also lived in Alabama. Her parents were from Alabama, and she lived there as a child and lived on an island in the middle of the Tennessee River, Seven Mile Island, which is near Florence, Alabama. I think it's now operated by the Coast Guard or something. But her family was Scots-Irish, and they're naturally superstitious. So there were tales of the unexplained, like, you know, ghost stories, inexplicable happenings. And so those really intrigued me probably the most. And I have recently written a short story based on one that was told about my grandfather's brother and an event of seeing a woman dressed in white at a cemetery. So I've taken some of those stories and turned them into fictional accounts and going from there.
Cool.
Yeah. Excuse me. Do you get to see the bluebonnets where you are there in Texas?
We do. Most of them are... we have some in East Texas. We have more acidic soil, and they like alkaline soil. But some people have successfully started patches of them here. They're mostly in the hill country and around the Dallas area, or they're more common there. But we do have some here.
Yeah, they're beautiful when the fields are covered with them.
Oh,
our
they are.
Our first managing director for Fresh Ink Group, Ann Stewart, who we lost some years back, she lived in the Dallas area, and every year she and her husband in the springtime would take a trip into hill country for a couple of weeks, and she would always send me pictures of just bluebonnets as far as you could see. She loved that sight.
They are gorgeous. The hill country is the best place to see them.
Well, we do have a couple of comments on Twitter right now, so I want to get to these. Marlena Smith says, talking about the books that we're talking about coming out, she said, so many great sounding books. My TBR list is constantly growing. Yours and mine both, Marlena. Berwayne Greenhoe, he says, I'm on Robert G. Willis-Croft's mailing list, so I get all his updates. Robert puts out a great newsletter. Cool. And this one from Robert G. Willis-Croft himself, he says, this is to you, Joan. I submit that purposefully walking under a ladder and allowing a black cat to cross your path before you is reverse superstition.
Good point. That could be.
Good point.
Yeah, I was having a kind of an argument with one time with a guy who called himself a Satanist. And I said, so you believe in Christianity? And he said, no. I said, well, yeah, you're just rooting for the other team. But, you know, if you believe in Satan, that's part of Christianity, you know. And he hadn't really thought about that before. And
I've won that argument.
Strange look on his face, you know.
Yep, I've used that argument before as well. So let's see, what do we want to do?
So do your cats write stories?
They try. Actually, my little black cat, I had left the computer one day, and he walked across the keyboard. I happened to be on a search engine, probably Google. Somehow he managed to type 76 in the search bar and got results. And I took a picture of it to keep as a momentum.
I wonder what he was looking for.
You come back to the computer and there's an article on the screen, 10 steps toward getting that 10th life.
And one of them, I think my cat, walked across it one day, and I had Scrivener open, and I thought, oh, my gosh, what has he done? Has he erased everything I just wrote? But fortunately, I found it.
Now, you've got an interesting family history in that you've got an older brother that's, like, quite a bit older than you.
That's true.
Correct? Yeah. So, I mean, what's the age difference, and what was that kind of like growing up, having somebody
No, we are 12 years apart. My parents had given up hope of, well, they were married 10 years before he was born. They'd given up hope of having children. He came along, and then 12 years later, I came along. But in spite of our age difference, we're close. We're still close. He started junior college the same year I started first grade. And so a little in a way, and then he was off at the University of Texas by the time I was 9 or 10. So in a way, we have said in our later years, we said, well, we were sort of like only children, except for a few years together. But he and I both are music lovers. I probably owe a lot of my fondness for music to him. So his time was the 60s, mine was the 70s, but I love his 60s music about as much or more than 70s music. So,
yeah, music, I'm a huge music fan. It doesn't matter if it's 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. I've got stuff from the 30s and the 40s on my iPod. Music is music. I just love music.
So you've got a bunch of... Go ahead.
I said music inspires me to write.
That's cool. Yeah.
I've heard a lot of people tell me that over the years, too, and I can't do it. I cannot listen to music while I'm writing. I got to do one or the other. Can't do both.
I have to listen to it before writing. When I'm writing, I have to be quiet. But, some songs have inspired chapters in books and even the title of a book or the storyline of a book. So
these nieces and nephews you've got, are you starting to see sparks of creativity in them, budding musicians, writers, artists?
One of my nieces is actually a singer. She and her husband have a small band. You know, they're hoping to make it big one of these days. And my nephew has dabbled some in writing.
Cool. Great. Beam, you want to go ahead and roll the first roll in, Whoopi, and then... we got some more comments, and hopefully we'll get some phone calls after this quick, brief little break.
Okay.
Every person has a private life and a secret self. This is true of those we know and people we only know because they are famous. Discover fascinating, intimate, clever, witty, poignant, insightful tales from a diverse roster of notable women who dare reveal both the unknown and the previously undisclosed. But these are not gossipy tales. No, They are personal, anecdotal, always meaningful stories for quiet reading, sharing aloud, even performing from the stage. Compiled by Detroit playwright Jay Ajluni, Whoopi Likes Her Bacon Crispy, 65 fascinating excerpts from the memoirs of famous and infamous women is illustrated with whimsical portraits that capture these remarkable celebrities at their best. Choose your own from laminate hardcover, softback, and digital editions, all proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Come away with a richer appreciation of these talented women and smile for permitting them to entertain you in unexpected and delightful ways.
All right.
And that video is entirely animated. It's one of the few videos we've made that's got no shots in it, just animation. It's a very cool video. Go there and check it out on YouTube. Hit that like button and help us spread the word.
Yeah, that one was a lot of fun putting together.
Yeah, definitely. Now, over on Twitter, I keep looking at this Marlena comment about Florence and how beautiful that is. She's right. That's where the University of North Alabama is. And I had never visited there until I moved down here. And then I went over there with some friends for some shows. And just a beautiful little campus, a nice area, fun little city. It's just a cool place to go. So I agree with you, Marlena. Florence rocks. But we do have a comment from Robert Willis Croft, and this is especially targeted to people who can be in the Denver area this weekend. So if you can, you might want to take a quick note here because he's going to give you a couple of booth numbers. He says, this is a general announcement for anyone in the Denver area this weekend. There will be a fabulous Christmas sales event at the Downtown Convention Center. I will be selling books with the Colorado Authors League, booths 726, 728, and 739. Now, if you're on Dr. Willis Croft's newsletter list, you get informed of all of these kinds of things too. And if you're not, want to get on there, send us a note at freshinkgroup.com through the contact form. We'll make sure he gets your information. So again, if you're in Denver this weekend, go check that out. Good chance to meet Robert G. Willis Croft and some other great authors too.
Yeah. That's, you know, especially if you're into the science fiction stuff, Robert G. Willis Croft is an exceptional science fiction author.
Yeah.
Now, Joan, do you have any, when you're not writing or listening to music, what kind of things do you like to do? Any kind of hobbies or special interests that, you know, like skydiving or?
Looking for ghosts.
I'm not that brave. I do love the outdoors. I like to take nature walks, enjoy the great outdoors. We have a nature preserve that's not too far from here, and that's one of my favorite places to walk. And I also like to take photographs. I'm strictly an amateur, but I love having the camera, although lately about all I use is my iPhone. It's so much more convenient.
Yeah.
And the other thing I like to do is take ghost walks. We've been up Jefferson, Texas. It's supposed to be one of the most haunted places around. We have actually stayed in a couple of hotels there that are supposedly haunted. Didn't see any ghosts, but they've got a great ghost walk there. And then I've been on one in Vicksburg, Mississippi, and also in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. So I love to hear the stories behind the hauntings.
Yeah, that's, people think they, kind of poo-poo the whole ghost thing. Oh, no such thing as ghosts. But the stories behind it are often true history.
Yeah, they're fun, no matter what you believe.
It's a historical event, I've had a couple of interesting situations. I'm not going to go into them now, but one of these days we're going to have to do an episode where we take calls from people who have had those kind of ghostly interactions or whatever you want to call them, because I think that would be a cool thing to do. So you've never had
calls from ghosts.
Take calls from ghosts. So Joan, you've never had the experience of, picking up a presence or something like that?
When I was in high school, I had an experience of seeing a neighbor one night, and my mother also saw him. And come to find out, though, at the time we saw him, what caught our attention is there was an ambulance at his house, and we knew he had a heart condition, and we figured, you know, that he had gone in the ambulance. Well, when the ambulance left, we saw a man walk out of the shadows up to the door. He bent down, petted the dog, walked in the house, and we thought, well, that was our neighbor. I'll call him Sam just for purposes of anonymity. And come to find out, it was not Sam. It was him in the ambulance, and he was dead. But to this day, I can still picture that man and see him pet the dog, and the dog is like acknowledged him and everything. So, yeah, I've seen the unexplained.
Yeah, see, that's, you know, that's what I like to call it, the unexplained or whatever. I don't necessarily believe in ghosts. I see some of these shows on TV, and it's like, all right, that's not whatever. But I believe there's those things out there that are kind of unexplained, and I think it would make an interesting hour-long discussion one of these weeks. But, you know,
well,
that would have been cool for Halloween.
The idea of the ghost tours intrigues me. I know they've got one in Birmingham, Alabama, and I've never really checked it out. I mean, what is that like? Are you going around in a bus or something, or walking? You see, visiting cemeteries, old neighborhoods. What's a ghost tour like?
It depends. The one in Gettysburg, and there's several in Gettysburg. You can imagine with a Civil War battlefield there. There's all kinds of hauntings and supposed sightings. But we went on one that was a walking tour. We went in a building that was once the Gettysburg Orphanage, and where a woman was in charge of these war orphans, and she actually would block them in a dungeon, in the basement in a dungeon. And when I say basement, it's like I'm 5'4", and the ceiling was not much taller than me.
Wow.
And she'd lock them in these rooms, and there's, you know, supposedly hauntings and unusual happenings there. Vicksburg, it was more, we actually went in a van and drove around the area and went to several places. And then Jefferson is a walking ghost tour, Jefferson, Texas.
Hmm. We do have a couple more.
It all depends.
Okay. We do have a couple more comments on Twitter. Helen Burrell, PhD, says, I'll be enjoying listening to multi-gifted writer Joan Hall. Her site even has music. Wow, 10 books by her at Amazon. And in the excerpt from Cold Dark Night, readers can revel in this writer's mastery of dialogue. Ooh, good words of praise from Dr. Helen. And then Robert Williscroft clarified those booth numbers. It's even numbers, 726-728-730. 726, 728, and 730. Although I got a feeling if you got in there and screamed really loud, Williscroft, somebody would probably, you know, point you in the right direction.
All right. Verwayne Greenho, he's adding to the ghost talk. He said, in my work as a paramedic, we picked up a lot of spirits. It is said that people who die suddenly often do not cross over right away. Do I know that for sure? Do I know that for true? Not sure. Do I know that I've picked up a few followers? Darn right I do.
And then Marlena Smith says, that's an amazing experience for you, Joan. I'm all for a ghost talk. I have quite a few stories I could share myself. Ooh.
Yeah.
You know, who to have on.
Yeah, we've talked to Marlena about this sort of thing in the past before, too, yeah. She'll have to be part of that if we do a ghost talk. And Verwayne Greenho also says, my wife and I went to Gettysburg on what was an unusually quiet visitor day, and the electric feelings I picked up was scary.
Ooh. Beam, you want to roll another one before we get back?
Yeah. Before
this
I roll
would be...
this. Go ahead. It's going to be Legacy of Danger?
Yeah, Legacy. But what's before? You got
before
a call or something?
Before I roll this, listeners, you can be part of this if you have a question or a comment for tonight's guest, author Joan Hall. You can call 516-453-9902. That's 563-9902, and we will take your call live on the air.
Or dead, if you're a ghost.
Elena Dukani inherits her family's castle in Romania, a land dipped in myths, folklore, and the legendary Walking Dead. The local proverb serves as a warning. Do not speak badly of the devil, because you cannot know to whom you will belong. When she's attacked by an international assassin, only her deceased husband and her ex-boyfriend's live presence can protect her on her journey to the mountainous region of Transylvania. But that's not the only problem troubling Elena. Who is that boy invading her dreams? And what really happened to a priceless gem-crusted silver cross buried by an earthquake in the 15th century? Who's stalking Elena? Who wants her dead and why? Legacy of Danger by Patricia A. Guthrie is a paranormal romantic thriller with a deep mystery and plenty of suspense. It'll haunt you in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats worldwide. Legacy of Danger by Patricia A. Guthrie is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
Yeah,
that book is out.
There's some spooky hauntings in that book.
Yep, it's out now. Go get your copy. She was at, in the pre-sale period, she was at 2.2 million or something on the rankings in Amazon. And on the release day, she got up close to 10,000 with that book, which is pretty good for that category, because that's a huge category on Amazon.
Yeah. Now, Joan, in your bio, I wanted to get back to this a little earlier, but I didn't get a chance to. You wrote a short YA novel by hand. Did you ever publish it, or have you ever considered publishing it?
No. You've heard of trunk novels. That was destroyed a long time ago. But I did, or I do remember my characters, and actually used a couple of them in a Christmas story that was in one of the anthologies I've done with AIW Press. Who knows? I might revive those characters someday and bring it from the 1970s to the 21st century and do something with it.
Or you can have a kind of a time setting in the 70s. So one of my current works in progress is set in 1977.
Oh, that was a great time to be alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, my first year of college. I can remember of it.
I was going into, I think, junior high that year, and that fall. I would have been going into junior high, sixth grade.
Yeah, you're showing your age, even calling it a junior high.
Well, yeah, it's middle school nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing with, some of the early works, the writing by hand. I've done that. I think we all did, before the advent of computers and whatnot, we'd write by hand and then maybe put it on the typewriter, the old-fashioned computer.
Speak for yourself. I always had a typewriter.
Those stories that we wrote that we look back at now and we say, meh. I often wonder what it would be like to pull some of the ones out, like your YA novel and update it with what you know as a writer now and put something together. I had a whole bunch of them that I tossed out, which I wish I hadn't because, I'm a better writer now. But there you go.
There you go.
One of the first writing classes I took, the instructor told us that don't ever throw away a piece of writing. She said, you may never do anything with it, but keep it somewhere because you never know. Good advice to follow.
Bet you could auction off a grocery list from Stephen King written when he was 19 years old and probably get six figures for it right now. Don't throw anything away if you're planning on being famous someday. We do have another comment on Twitter. We got Jan Sykes in the audience now. She says, I'm late to this party, but happy to be here to listen to what at Joan Hall Writes has to say. I loved her first two stories in the Legends of Madeira series. Thanks, Jan.
good to have you out there in the audience.
So, Joan, what's your writing process like? Did you have like a set pattern? Do you do a certain time every day or a certain place? Or do you set a goal for how many words? Or do you just let it happen as it happens?
I would love to have a daily word goal count. And I try to do that, but I work full time. So my writing is write when I can. Most of it's done in the evenings. My husband recently retired, but up until that he worked evenings, so I had the house to myself, except for the cats, of course. And that's when I do most of my writing. And still, now that he's here, I've learned to tune out and just write.
So, story ideas. Now, we talked a little bit about, remembering some of the stuff that your mother told you, but generally, where do, like for your series here, where do you get your story ideas from?
My first series, my Driscoll Lake series, planned for the first book to be a standalone novel. It was based loosely on the small town in Texas where I live now. And I set it in 2011. At that time, Texas was undergoing a severe drought. And what intrigued me, in a town not far from here, they found a car that had been submerged in a pond for several years. And I thought, I'm going to put that into a story. And then that same year, they found part of the space shuttle Columbia in Lake Nacogdoches because the water levels got so low that a huge piece of the space shuttle that exploded a few years earlier was visible for the first time. So I worked that in. I worked the drought in. And then I had a character in that book that I had planned for him to be the bad guy. And I started writing it. And as I got into it, he would not let me do that to him. So I changed it up a little bit, made him a good guy. And then as I got further into the book, it was like he would say, tell my story. From that, the second book was born, and series, you got to have at least three books, so I ended up with three. I think a vivid imagination. I think it was Orson Scott Card in a quote I heard about, I read from him one time that said, stories are all around us, you just have to pay attention. So I've had observations of people. As I said, songs have sometimes inspired stories, and you just have to look for inspiration.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that stories are all around us. The story that you told about the water levels going down and the car being in the lake there.
Columbia.
Yeah,
Columbia, she said.
Yeah, I've seen there was a story here on one of the programs I watched where they have it's kind of like an unsolved mystery type of thing. But they had, and I believe it was Iowa, there was a drought, and they had this river that was going through farmland, and it had dried up, and they saw this car on the bottom of the riverbed. And they went down there, and there were remains in it, skeletal remains, and come to find out, this was some people that had gone missing in the late 60s. This is 40 years later. And nobody knew what happened to them. They were on their way to a high school football game. Three kids in the car, I believe it was. Two girls and a boy. They just had gone missing. Nobody knew what happened to them. People assumed, they just, decided to run off or whatever. And 40 years later, they found out that that night they had crashed in the water and, 40 years later, they were discovered.
Wow.
I that story. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Over on Twitter, Jan Sykes added another note. She says, the experts say that the brain engages in a completely different way when we write by hand as opposed to typing on a computer. I believe that is true. Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. It'd be using different parts of your brain. I got my first typewriter when I was in second grade, and I never looked back.
Our snobby guy, the snobby writer.
Yeah.
Well, so second grade. And
Yeah. So, Joan, do you use beta readers, editors, anybody that you work with? And we've also heard about your friend from church who helps you with PR.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm in a critique, an online critique group. All of them are also writers, and they've been extremely helpful to me. I have a former coworker that is my unofficial beta reader, so I always have to send things to him to look it over. And if I don't send anything in a timely manner, he'll remind me, are you writing? Do you have anything to send me? Him not being a writer is able to point out a lot of things as a, from a reader perspective. So it's been helpful.
Yeah, that's the whole idea behind a beta reader. They different set of eyes, different mindset. They come in handy. What has fan reaction?
Do you want to name that critique group before you move on? We like giving credit. Okay.
Yeah. So, anyway, but they are also published authors.
Okay. Cool. So what's like your fan reaction? What kind of feedback are you getting from your work?
I have, as I said, there's a friend, a local friend from church, and she's my local PR unofficially. There was a group of us at dinner a couple of weeks ago, and probably about 30 people in the group, and she was on the opposite end of the table, and all of a sudden I heard my name called, and she's telling everybody, Joan writes books, and so somebody got her iPhone out and was saying, okay, I'm ordering some right now. So that's helpful.
Does she need any more friends?
Pardon?
Does she need more friends? I could use one like that.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. She's a very outgoing person, so I told everybody, I said, Kathy's my unofficial publicity agent. So.
Go, Kathy. So, Beam, do you want to roll another one, and then we'll start talking about Joan's books?
Sure. We can do that.
This would be girl shoes.
Aspiring young Chinese immigrant, GGO, survives by working as a stripper, but she strives for true success in the U.S. real estate industry. Navigating this highly competitive business is tough, especially when her only support comes from the deeply flawed men she loves and her old cohorts from the strip club. Issues of betrayal and trust, loyalty and commitment complicate her goals, even as one lesbian friend adds new dimensions to her understanding of love versus desire. Then the market crashes and financial turmoil threatens to rob GGO of all she has achieved. Can she find new ways to chase her dreams and still manage to keep her clothes on? Or might she find a better reason to take them off? Girl Wears Those Shoes is a tale of love and power. The story of one woman who wants to make the world her own, if only she can figure out how. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Girl Wears Those Shoes is available in all hardcover, softcover, and all digital formats worldwide.
Yes, indeed.
That's a new video. Just got posted.
Brand spanking new.
Get over to the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube and check it out. Make sure you like it. And we do have another comment. This one's from May Claire. She says, really enjoying tonight's discussion with At Joan Hall Writes, learning more about her writing progress and how her stories develop. Great foray, boy, I'm not reading well today. Great foray into ghost stories, too, and how some family legends have factored into her work. Yeah, good point, May Claire. Thanks for writing in.
Thanks for joining the conversation.
So you know May, Joan?
Of course. She and Jan are both fellow Story Empire contributors.
Ah, yes. Okay.
And I'm over there now. So.
Ooh.
It's just a great group, of writers and
it's an honor to be asked, isn't it?
Yes, it is, definitely. The Stranger, it's a novella. Tell us a little something about this one.
Oh, that was my first published book or novella. It was partially inspired by a true story. My former sister-in-law's father grew up with a single dad, or his parents divorced when he was a child. His mother was originally from England. When he was grown, he found out that he had a sister. And what happened when the parents divorced, the mother went back to England, took the daughter, and he stayed with his father in America. So I was like, man, I can't imagine that. And so it sort of inspired, or it served as the inspiration for The Stranger, which is more of a family type story, family dynamics.
And this is for sale right now, right?
It is. It's actually a permanent, it's a free on Amazon.
Oh, so,
hey.
Good price.
Can't beat free. All right. Who doesn't
Although
like
if I put back in, I'm sure I would edit the heck out of it, but anyway.
I try not to look at old stuff, my old stuff, yeah. Really. Wonder who sneaked in and published this thing while I was looking the other way. We do have another comment on Twitter. This is C.S. Boyack. He says, enjoying the show. Took me a while to figure out the Twitter comments. Lisa Burton left a comment on the website via Facebook. Love the ghost stories. Yeah, the Twitter thing's not that complicated. Just send out a tweet and put hashtag Fresh Ink Group anywhere in that tweet, and then we'll see it during the show while we're live on the air.
Yeah. And we'll read it and give you full credit.
And then deny knowledge of ever knowing anything about it.
And it's always nice when Lisa Burton shows up.
Yeah. So the Driscoll Lake novels, you have three of them?
Yes. That was my first series. And the first book, Unseen Motives, was inspired, as I said earlier, were set during the drought. And from that, the other two books came into play, Unknown Reasons and Unclear Purposes. And Unclear Purposes, the opening, I said that music sometimes inspires me to write. The opening chapter of Unclear Purposes was inspired by the Eagles song, Lion Eyes.
Okay.
Oh,
cool. Good
All right.
song. Good band. All right. You want to tell us a little bit about these three novels? A brief introduction?
Who would they appeal to? What kind of stories are they?
They're mystery and suspense, or a little bit of romance. I never set out to write romantic suspense or romance, but it's kind of found its way into my books. As I said, the first one is Unseen Motives, and then we pick up with Unclear Purposes, which has probably been my favorite book to write, and I guess it's because of the character in the first book that demanded that I not make him a bad guy. So that one was interesting. It picks up where Unseen Motives leaves off, although they are completely standalone novels. But there are, it's best to read them in order because there are some things that, if you read the second book first, you would learn some things about the first book, you know, that would kind of spoil the ending. And as I said, I think a series needs to be at least three books. So from there I wrote Unclear Purposes, the third book.
Now, when did you write these ones?
The first one was published, I think, in 2016 and in 2017, and the third one in 2019.
Okay. So that's...
Now, are these books that you can find on Amazon, or can you find them other places as well?
Those are available on Amazon and other places. They're in paperback only on Amazon, but they're in digital format on Amazon and I believe Barnes & Noble and other places.
Okay.
They're not exclusively Amazon.
All right.
Okay, now we've got another series to talk about here. You want to go ahead and roll another commercial and then talk about Legends of Madeira?
Sure.
Now, introducing book one in the new series by master sci-fi storyteller Robert G. Williscroft, Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle. Dying of prostate cancer, wealthy entrepreneur Braxton Thorpe is frozen in hopes of someday being revived and cured. That's when he discovers a threat to the entire solar system. But he has a problem. He's dead. He awakens to find himself uploaded into an electronic matrix. Exploring beyond the matrix and the larger global net, he discovers the Oort, a distributed electronic entity older than humanity, with an unnerving secret. Aliens wiped out nearly all life on Earth once, and they're coming back to do it again. The mathematical entity that is Thorpe has to find a way to convince humans of this threat, and in time to do something about it. But how? And what? Will Thorpe's carefully assembled team have any shot at saving the world? Will the Russians and Chinese help or betray? And who uploaded the cat? Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle, is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, all ebook formats, and now as an audiobook narrated by Trenton Bennett, including music and sound effects. Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
And the second Oort Chronicle, Federation to the Stars, should be in pre-sale within the next week or two. Probably about 2 weeks, my best guess. But that's an excellent book, and it's an excellent series. So go ahead and pick up that first one, Icicle, now. Get it read, because the second one will be out lickety-split.
Yeah. So, Legends of Madeira. Now, this is another series that you've written, Joan?
This is my newest series. There is a short story prequel, which is called House of Sorrow, and then the first full-length novel is Cold Dark Night. And actually, I talked about the character in the Driscoll Lake series who demanded I make him a different person. I had one in the third book also that I wasn't going to redeem him. I have this habit of redeeming characters, I guess. but anyway, shout out for May Claire because he's one of her favorite characters. Jason Montgomery is a lead character in the first Legend of Madeira book. And it's set in New Mexico. I have never lived in New Mexico, but I've vacationed there many times. And if I didn't live in Texas, I think I would love to live in northern New Mexico. But it's a dual timeline. There's an event that happens in the 1870s that is connected with modern day. And it involves Jason and his wife, or they become involved in it. And if the mystery's not solved, or Jason could be the next victim. Prequel, House of Sorrow, and I don't ever recommend writing a book this way. I had an idea actually in Vicksburg, and I took a picture on one of those ghost walks of this old Victorian home, and I thought, oh, that's great for the story I want to write. So I wrote about a 350-word blog post about 5 or 6 years ago that was going to be a lead-in for a longer story. And I called it Woman in Black, and it was about an older woman who lived in a Victorian house, and she'd become reclusive and strange in a way. Not really strange, but just there was something in her past that caused her to turn into a recluse. So I took that, and I thought, well, I'm going to expand that short story to about 2,500 words and put it in a collection of short stories. The more I wrote, the more I realized, oh, this is perfect lead-in for what I have in mind for Cold Dark Night. So I took a 350-word blog post to about 2,000 words and then up to about 15,000. But I had a lot of fun writing that because it's set primarily in the 1960s. I used real-life events such as the moon landing, the Kennedy assassination or Bobby Kennedy's assassination, events that happened then and weaved them into the story. So a lot of it was, of course, actual happenings, but my memories of that time. So, and I was a child in the 60s, but I love the 60s, so it was a lot of fun to write.
So what's out now then is the prequel and the first novel, correct?
The prequel and the first novel, and yes. I'm currently planning the second one. I haven't got into writing. I've released both of those in the spring back-to-back and was literally exhausted after the blog tours, and so I pretty much took the summer off from writing. I wrote a little bit, but just needed some downtime, and so I'm currently working on a series of a book of short stories, and I plan to start writing the second book in January, or the second in Legends of Madeira, which is will be named Blood Red Dawn.
Blood Red Dawn. How many books in all do you think it'll wind up being?
I'd like to write four. So, and I have titles for the others and brief ideas for the others, but I haven't got there yet. And each one, there will be a legend. There will be a historical event that's tied to modern day. So,
cool.
My first time to do dual titles, but it was fun to do.
The short stories that you're working on now, I like your title for that book. What is that?
The working title, and I'm sure I'll come up with something else, but the working title I came up with, A Book of Shorts.
There you go.
And so I was looking for a graphic to go with that, and I Googled. I think I got on Pixabay or something and looking for something with shorts, and I came up with this. I saw this little graphic that had a bunch of little dachshunds with their little short legs.
Oh.
I thought, well, okay, maybe it'll stay a book of shorts. I used to have dachshunds, so.
Yeah, that would make a pretty good book cover there. Now, short stories, do you have a collection of them already, or are you in the process of writing them?
I have a couple that I have one that has been actually been edited, and is pretty much ready to go. It's about 3,000 words. And then I have recently completed the first draft of two more and am currently working a third one. And because I'm not superstitious, I want it to be 13 short stories. Or maybe it's the reverse superstition.
Yeah, the reverse superstition. Now, do you approach short stories the same way you approach a full-length novel, or is there a difference between the two?
Oh, good question. I haven't thought about it. It's hard for me to write short. Anytime I have a word count go and I think, well, I want this to be 2,500 words, it ends up to being about 3,000 or 3,500. But, yeah, with short stories, you have to write tighter, and you don't get into the, I guess, the character dynamic like you would in a novel. But if done right, I'm of the mind that a story, whether it's a novel, whether it's a novella or short story, it needs to be only as long as it is needed to tell the story and to do it well. So pull this off. The one I just finished I thought would be 7,500 words, and it came in at just under 10,000 first draft. So.
Yeah, that's ballpark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, over on Twitter, Jan Sykes says that she just picked up the free novel, The Stranger. I look forward to reading it. All right. There's another one, Joan. And then she also added, I agree with you at Joan Hall Writes. I love northern New Mexico. I've only ever passed through it. I know it's gorgeous country, just vistas that are amazing. And then, Beam, you want to grab Marlena's comment?
Sure. Marlena says, I love the idea for your book of shorts. Also, my lucky number is 13. Makes for a great conversation to those that are superstitious.
Definitely.
Well, my birthday falls on the 13th, and I've had many Friday the 13th birthdays, and I always had a blast. So I'm not superstitious.
Joan, you started to say something about New Mexico.
Oh, it's a beautiful place, or the northern part especially. Taos and Santa Fe and that area I really like.
I got to get out that way one of these days. I've not been out west. I was supposed to go out and spend a week out in Arizona with my cousin, and then he had some marital issues, and it was like, all right, I'm not dropping into the middle of that. So that's been postponed. So, you know, maybe next summer I'll get out that way. But
yeah, my only stops in New Mexico were to do some hiking, and just like hiking in, you know, like around the Phoenix area in Arizona as well. And my experiences were always that I would be real ambitious and wind up hiking up to the top of something really high and then wonder, what were you thinking? And how are you going to get down from here? So that's my strongest impression of New Mexico is, wow, this is beautiful. Man, look at this view. Now, how am I supposed to get down?
Parachute. Joan.
Parachute. Joan. Go ahead.
You've sticking with the short stories, you've been in some anthologies as well. But on the writing of the short stories versus novels, I kind of, myself, I approach them a little differently. But yeah, like you said, because the short stories have got to be tighter. So there's slight difference in there. But I love short stories. I love reading them. I love writing them. In fact, I'm reading Mae Claire's short story collection right now, and man, I'm impressed. You've got stories in four anthologies. Tell us a little bit about some of these. They look like they might be kind of different ones, each of them, from what I can see here.
Like, start with Unshod, if you would.
Yeah, Unshod.
Sure. Unshod is it's in the genre of Western, but it's not your old-time shoot-em-up Western. The ideal for that was that it be set in the American West. So my story in there is called The Blue Moon Murders. And it is, I don't mention a place, I mention a fictitious town that, and it's about a superstition involving blue moons, which, you know, a blue moon is the second full moon of in a calendar month. And at the time I was attending a writer's group, and I took it one night, and one of the people there said, I don't know where you set this, but in my mind, I picture northern New Mexico, and I thought, I nailed it. That's exactly where I'm. So, but I believe there's nine authors in that collection, and you will find some that are set in, you know, the 1800s and then some modern day. And then the second one, I believe the second one was Macabre Sanctuary, and it,
love the name.
Might, thrills and chills and things that go bump in the night, a variety of ghost stories and things like that. My story in that was called The Keeper's House, and it's set in an old lighthouse. I also have a fascination with the lighthouse, and it's a ghost story, a ghost fiction. Quantum Wonderlust is a time travel anthology. Fun with that because the concept of time travel has always fascinated me as well. And I went back, for my story, I went back in time to World War II, which was so much fun to write. It involved a naval aviator who has to bail out of his aircraft, and he ends up in 1943. So it was a lot of, I had to research a lot. I think that novel or the story that really taught me to like research. So not only did I have to research modern day Navy, but things in 1943 and then how much a hamburger cost, how much such and such would cost, what movies were available, you know, or what movies were popular at that time. And then the other one is a Christmas anthology, and that is the one that I used a couple of characters from my notebook novel from when I was 17.
And the anthology is called Bright Lights and Candle Glow?
Yes.
What's your story in there?
It is about a family in Montana that lives on a ranch in Montana. And, oh, goodness, I can remember the book I wrote at 17 better than I can this. But the husband gets lost in a snowstorm, and it's around Christmas time. And it's funny, for that novel, we had several different authors contribute, and nobody planned it, but each of the stories went decade by decade. You've got some from the 20s, if I recall, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, 50s, you know, and
oh,
it was totally
cool.
Unplanned, but it just worked out that way. So
wow.
Yeah, remembering the stories, that's, you know, a sign that you've written a lot of stuff. Between my two short story collections, there's 39 stories there, plus numerous short stories that are in anthologies. And I've had people tell me, yeah, I love that story titled blah, blah, blah. And I'll have to say, what one was that about? Because
yeah.
I wrote it, but I forgot, you know, because there's just so many of them. And like Stephen had mentioned earlier, he doesn't go back and reread a lot of his own stuff, and neither do I. So that's a good sign. You've written a lot when you – it's hard to remember what it was.
Yeah, it seems, too, like authors also associate their work with other works that they've liked or that they've admired or maybe even inspired them to write this particular story. Like you just mentioned, the guy going out and getting lost in the snow at Christmas. Immediately, I thought of one of my favorite writers, T. Caragason Boyle. He had a story in The New Yorker one time about a guy who went out and wound up getting lost in a snowstorm and then stuck. And, man, it was a fantastic story. And just that association, you know, intrigues me about your story, Joan. So it's easy to think about all this stuff and get everything all kind of, you know, associated with each other. And then, you know, there's been times I've even thought, gee, was that in my story or something that I read?
Yeah. Now, Joan, talking about the World War II story, the time travel story, you had mentioned doing the research into that era. Do you enjoy, I've asked this of many guests on the show, do you enjoy the research into stories?
I do now. I used to, honestly, when I first started writing, I hated research, but I think it was because, well, inexperience, I just wanted to write a book and I didn't want to have to bother with things. But then, you know, I realized that you have to do some. But when it was my husband that said, you ought to write a story involving the military. And I thought, I know nothing about, you know, the military, except my favorite TV show is favorite TV shows from the past were MASH and JAG. And so both of those involved the military. Yeah, MASH is great. So
yeah, because I love the research part.
And it was so neat. I mean, you could buy a hamburger for 15 cents. And I had to put in a plug in there for my favorite all-time movie, Casablanca, which was popular in 1943.
Oh, yeah.
But it was just a lot of fun to do the research on that one.
Yeah. Research to me was always right up there is part of my favorite part of putting together a story before I start writing it. The writing is my favorite part, but the putting it together, that research, because you learn so much. I can go through a history book and imagine my character in this particular situation that I'm reading about in a history book. And it's like, oh, hey, here's an aside in the story that I didn't think about.
Another thing about that research, too, that's really important with storytelling is you need it for verisimilitude. And I hope most of our listeners know the word verisimilitude. If not, it's one that you should know. It's when the pieces and parts of a story are put together in such a way that they're believable, even if they're all fiction. You know, because if you put the wrong details in something, it can just totally shatter that illusion and pull you out of it. I remember one time I read a short story that a guy had submitted to me, and in this story, he had a character following another character through the streets of Ann Arbor in a car. And my degrees are from University of Michigan. I spent a number of years living in Ann Arbor or close to Ann Arbor, and everything in there was, you could tell the guy was looking at a map, but not noticing which streets are one way. So he had this guy following him through town, going the wrong way on one-way streets. And I couldn't pay attention to the story because that kept bothering me. It's just a little detail. But, you know, if you're gonna look at a map and have somebody following you in a car, you better notice things like, can you turn left there before you have him do it?
And readers do pick up on things like that.
Oh, they will.
Yeah, they
oh,
do.
They will. And focus on them. Zero in on them.
And they'll let you know in the reviews. Hey, that wasn't, they didn't have cell phones in 1925.
Yeah. So, Joan, how do you publish? Are you a self-publisher? You work with a publisher?
I do work with a small publisher, AIW Press, and have been with them for about 4 years now, I believe.
So you're happy and you recommend them to other people?
I am happy, yes. Mm-hmm.
Good. That's AIW Press, right?
AIW Press, uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look them up. So do they do everything for you, or do you, like, get involved in your own cover design, or how do you work?
I do get involved. I actually have designed my own covers, and that's fun to do also. I didn't think I'd ever do a paperback cover. I was to death the first time, but it's actually, you know, pretty easy once you get used to it. And yeah, I get feedback from, you know, from others and suggestions, but I enjoy designing the covers.
Yeah, I think, you know, as the author, I mean, you know, you have the idea on what you want it to look like, and that's going to be the first thing that most people see is that cover, whether it's, you know, in a bookstore or going to Amazon, that cover's got to pop. It's got to jump out at them. And you know, I know I have these ideas for my story, my covers, and I just tell Stephen here, you know, what I'm thinking, and he starts mocking some up, and we eventually get the one that, yeah, that's what I was thinking about. We do have a comment over here on Twitter from Jan Sykes, going back to the research thing. She says, research can be time-consuming, and as Stephen said, you have to get it right. Oh, the things we can learn. Great conversation.
Hmm.
Indeed.
Yeah, now you mentioned you're doing your own cover design. You know, I'm looking at some of your covers here on Amazon. We've all heard of Amazon, haven't we? I'm seeing, you mentioned Pixabay earlier. I'm seeing photos. I'm also seeing what looks like some artwork, like Quantum Wanderlust. Do you work with artists at all, or are you just looking at stock images and working from those? What's your approach?
I can't take credit for Quantum Wanderlust design, but I do stock images, you know,
mm-hmm.
And Pixabay, I've used those because they're free and royalty free, you know, like for promos and stuff like that. But for the covers, I've actually purchased images that, you know, you have the rights to use.
Yeah, you get into like the Shutterstocks or whatever, and they're not inexpensive,
right.
But they're not too bad either. They're workable. But you're right, Pixabay. There's a lot of those. We like Unsplash if we're looking for real high quality, free, royalty free images as well.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, there's libraries out there, you know, Envato and Storyblocks and some of those as well that are not that expensive. If this is something you're going to be doing on a regular basis, but I like your work, Joan. These all look beautiful. These are nice covers.
Thank you.
So,
yeah, Unsplash, I think they have more than Pixabay, so it's a good site also.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, since you have quite a few books under your belt, do you have any advice that you could offer to other authors? Something to pass along?
Oh, don't ever give up your dream. I had to overcome a lot of self-doubt. I always wanted to be a writer, but I thought, I couldn't do that. I, you know, I wouldn't know how to do that. So, you know, if you have the desire, go for it and involve yourself with a critique group, a writer's group, surround yourself with people that know the trade and get advice. And writers have to have tough skin. So sometimes you've heard the expression, kill your darling. Sometimes you write this thing that you think, oh, that's just perfect. And, you know, I love it. I keep it. And it's like, it's not moving the story. It shows no purpose. So, you know, you have to learn to take criticism. But when you surround yourself with others that know the trade, it will make you a better writer. And, you know, listen to what others say, and it'll make you a better writer, I believe.
That's excellent advice. And maybe I could add to that, and if you're in Texas, don't forget to check out the Blue Bonnets every spring.
Exactly.
Writers need to know what's happening around them and appreciate everything that they're seeing, the beautiful and the ugly.
Yeah.
By the way, we did have another couple of notes from Verwayne Greenhoe. He warned us earlier that he'd been warned he might get some unexpected company, and he said, rats, I have unexpected company here now. Thank you, Joan Hall, at Joan Hall Writes. I enjoyed this show, and I bet that we would have a ton of stuff to talk about on the ghost stuff. Lisa and I wish you the best, Verwayne.
Well, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, Verwayne's a good friend of the show, and we have a lot of respect for him and his work and his wife, Lisa. So, yeah, that was excellent advice. Joan, how can people find you if someone wants to talk to you, show you their stuff, learn more about you or whatever, social media, your handles, your hooks, your tweets, your twoots, or whatever?
Okay. Well, the easiest way to find me is go to my website, which is joanhall.net, and I have an About Me page and a list of social contacts where you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. For many years, I used to do a newsletter and stopped doing that, and I've recently resumed doing that. So there's a place if anyone wants to sign up for my newsletter, also there.
Great. Are you on Twitter?
I am, and my handle is at Joan Hall Writes.
Great. Okay. Are there any others you'd like to mention, like on Facebook?
I do have a Facebook page. I have an automatic feed for my blog in there. I have not kept up with that page very faithfully of late, I confess.
Okay.
But
well, that's Facebook.
And listeners, as always, if you're trying to get a hold of one of our guests and aren't sure how, go to freshinkgroup.com. We have a contact form there. Send us a note. We'll make sure that we get in touch with that person for you. And Joan Hall, I got a feeling a lot of people are going to be wanting to talk to you in a near future.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed this tonight.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you being on. Yeah, this has been terrific. I think this is the first time that I've ever really had a chance to talk with you for very long. I've been an admirer of your work for many years.
Oh, well, thank you.
It would be nice if we would have had some callers calling in tonight. That always makes the show a little better.
It's hard to predict, though.
Yeah, but, you know, some people they might be listening while doing something else, so they can't actually get to the phone, but we are grateful for the listeners that were on Twitter tonight. So thank you to everybody over there.
And maybe in the coming weeks, Joan Hall will call in during a show and show us how to do it.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. All right, listeners, we got a whole bunch of shows coming up. We got, you know, we only mentioned some of the books coming out, like next week, for example, From Chaos with Love, a book with 240 poems by Joshua Stutzman. I could name more, but, you know, we're trying not to spend too much time at the beginning of the show. But we do want to let you know that our guest next week is Aisha Ihsan. She is a Pakistani. She's the daughter of a Pakistani military general, and she emigrated to go to college and wound up in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, where she became a TV broadcaster doing the evening news. And became an in-the-field reporter as well, and now she's teaching at the university there in Dubai. She is one of our authors. We published her first novel, And she's going to be on our show next week. And even though she's halfway around the world, she's agreed to get up and be available at 4 a.m. so that we can do her show live. So watch for Ayesha Hassan next week.
Yeah, 4 a.m. her time. And we, you know, try to set up, a better time where we can just record it and then play it at the normal time. But no, she was game for getting up early, and kudos to her for that. The week after that, we're going to have one of those recorded shows. Author Astrid Vijay, she's in Sweden, and she's going to be on the following week. And what we'll do with that is we'll do the episode on Monday, and it'll be a recording process. And then we'll upload it on the following Wednesday, so you can tune in at the regular time. Now, when this happens, we can't do the telephone calls. However, I'm sure Stephen and I will be monitoring Twitter. So any comments that you have or questions or whatever, that we might be able to answer those back on there. So there will be some kind of feedback from us. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, we're going to do some experimenting and see the way to make these work best. This Astrid Vijay, Beam didn't mention, she's a USA Today best-selling author.
She sells
lots of books. So I guess one of the questions I'm going to ask her is, hey, how does that feel?
How does that work?
How can I do that? Yeah, she's in Sweden. And then the week after that, we're going to have another pre-recorded show, and this is with Nicholas Rossis, who is in Greece. And Nicholas Rossis, those of you who are familiar with him, will definitely be looking forward to having a chance to talk with him, or hear him talk anyway. And if you're not familiar with him, he's an excellent writer. He does everything from children's to adult stuff, fiction, nonfiction, how-to. And he's quite the guru on social media and what's going on with Amazon and things like that, too. So he's going to be a good guest. And then after that, Beam?
After that, we get into December. Author Jenny Wong is on, which we just heard the commercial for her Girl Wears Those Shoes. So she'll be in live on the show in December.
And also we'll be having Abigail Hugini, who's the author of that There Must Be Something in the Water, about all the people who came out of Green Pond, South Carolina. And then after that, Beam?
Sci-fi master Robert G. Williscroft will join us. He's a return guest. He will have the new book out by that time, so tune in for that, especially if you're a sci-fi fan.
Yep. So thanks again, Joan. This has been a lot of fun, and we look forward to having you back sometime.
Well, thanks. I've enjoyed it. It's been a lot of fun talking with y'all.
Great.
Well,
thanks.
Yeah, thanks for taking time out on a Wednesday night to chat with us, Joan. We appreciate that. And hopefully we've introduced you to some new fans. And, the ghost stories. If we do the ghost show, we'll have to have you on for that as well.
And we would like to thank all the people who called in tonight, but we can't. But thanks to all the people who participated on Twitter. That we really enjoy that part of it, being able to just get some real-time feedback without people having to. It is a big commitment to make a phone call and, you know, talk on air and all that. And Twitter is a real easy way just to throw us a quick note and get a comment in there. We appreciate that. Thanks for everybody.
We will see you again next week, everybody. Take care and enjoy the rest of your night and the rest of your week.
Okay, have a good night, Joan. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.